How would you like to learn how to bend metal with your mind for real? Well, you can. News for the Soul is home to the one and only Spoon Bending Kit, an instantly downloadable digital gift that contains 2 hours of audio and visual instructions designed to get your mind out of the way and teach you how to truly affect solid matter just with your thoughts. Find out once and for all how you are affecting your reality with every thought you think. Don't let anything block you from creating the life that you want. Download the newsforthesoul.com Spoon Bending Kit today. Just go to newsforthesoul.com right now and click on the bent spoon. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Hello, this is Satyan Raja, and you're listening to News for the Soul. Be open in your mind, your body, your being. Allow yourself to drench in this awesome information to evolve you to your next place.
We'll be back with more life-changing talk radio in a moment. Did you know that News for the Soul is home to the largest totally free life-changing audio resource on the World Wide Web? And did you know that journalist and single mom Nicole Whitney is single-handedly making this freely available for you to hear? That's why your support is critical to help keep News for the Soul totally free. You can help in several ways. Firstly, you can tell everyone you know about News for the Soul. So many people out there still do not know about this totally free, life-changing resource. So do us, yourself, and your friends a favor and pass it on today. Secondly, financial support for News for the Soul helps keep the show going. Whether it's through advertising, donations, or purchases of our exclusive audio and video packages, like the one and only Spoon Bending Kit, which will teach you how to bend metal with your mind for real. This support helps keep us on the air. Go to newsforthesoul.com now to find out more. We invite you to help us help the world. And thanks for tuning in. It's listeners like you who have made News for the Soul the number one life-changing talk radio show in the world, according to Google and AOL. Together, we are already making a difference in our world. So thank you for listening, and thanks in advance for your support. Now, let's get back to the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to News for the Soul. This is Daniel Brinkley.
This is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
Okay, everybody, take a deep breath. We know that we choose to come to this world, and we're chosen to come to this world, and we've come for breath. We breathe in for ourselves and out for spiritual unfoldment. And as we breathe these moments, let's open up our heart and open up our souls, and let the true awareness of News for the Soul make its impact now and forever.
Good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. Got that all covered again with a new guest. Hopefully not the last time you'll hear from this author, because definitely kindred spirits showing up today. Deborah Lavelle, she's the author of The Magic Doorway into the Divine. 25 years ago, she says she had a life-altering mystical experience and healing experience that led her on a new journey that culminated into her current life path, her work, and this book. The Magic Doorway into the Divine is the book, and themagicdoorway.com is the website. That's where you go. Deborah Lavelle. So let's bring her on and start the fun. Hi, Deborah. Welcome to News for the Soul.
Hi, Nicole.
Welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm great.
So, Magic Doorway into the Divine. What, obviously, the story begins shortly before, or somewhere before, your awakening into this life-changing mystical experience. Where were you at back then, 25 years ago or so?
Well, 25 years ago, I was pretty involved in the world in that I was modeling and doing some dancing and married to a fairly wealthy man, and I had quite a glamorous outer life, I guess you could call it. But I felt kind of empty inside. I felt as if I knew that there was something that I had to understand, and I didn't quite know what that was. And as well as that, I was having trouble with my it was more than just trouble. My uterus had dissolved. But I didn't know that until I went to the doctor, and then he said, "I've never seen anything like this. What's going on? Your uterus is dissolved." And I said, "I don't know." And he took me into the hospital and did all the tests and everything, and he said, "You know, you'll never ever menstruate again, or you'll never have a child." And I don't know what's going on. So it was quite a shock to me. And I was...
That's the word they use, dissolved.
Dissolved.
What does that even mean?
Well, I guess that I don't know how what he was seeing exactly, except that it had just shriveled up. And he said he'd never seen anything like that. And then a friend of mine came up to me and said, you know, there's this workshop coming up and designed to take you to enlightenment. And I said, I'm coming. And that was it. That was the beginning. And I sat there for that entire workshop, and I just dived into deep meditation for hours and hours and hours, and questioning, who am I? And had a very profound experience of who I was.
So what workshop was it, and who was facilitating it?
It was... in Toronto, and it was facilitated by his name was Stefan, and it was at that time called Enlightenment Intensive.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We have talked about those fairly extensively on the show.
Yeah, I know. And it was quite profound. So I sat there for hours doing the question, and I had such a horrible headache, I just thought I couldn't bear it anymore. And finally, when I was asked that question, tell me who you are, after hours and hours and days of this, I screamed out from absolute rage. And I said, who the bleep, well, hell, actually, who the hell do you think I am? And in that moment, it was like a veil was pierced. You know, my body shook and kept bouncing up and down about a foot off the pillow.
Wow.
It was very profound, but no words could describe the transcendental experience that I had in that moment. All I could do was say, I am God, I am that, I am me. And I just exploded. I felt I had exploded with light, and that I died to who and what I believed myself to have been up till then.
Wow. And for those listening, if you haven't heard the interviews with Satya and Raja, we're talking about the Illumination Intensive. Were you... Yeah, how many days was yours? How long did you go?
I did many, many intensives, but the very first one was only... Well, I can't even remember now. It's 25 years ago. I think it was about 2.5 days, maybe 3.
And that's where you go in, they take your cell phone and your car keys, and you don't talk to anybody.
You don't wear makeup, you can't... You know, do anything fun.
Yeah, it's all over.
Yeah, it's all over, and it was hell, you know, looking at those barren bunk beds. But it was all worth it.
Actually, my cameraman and I at Life Changing TV, we went to Satyen's workshop. It was about 1.5 years ago at the, it was a Catholic church retreat, so there was all these, you know, crucifixion statues all around. It really added to the ambiance of our first Illumination Intensive.
Well, sure.
But very dramatic, you know, I mean, the direct experiences of well, illumination, enlightenment that people are having in these events are amazing. I mean, this changed your whole life.
Well, it did, and then my uterus grew back, which was a miracle.
I mean, it's so crazy, isn't it? The metaphors in all of these things of how it manifests into physical form and how we can change it. Wow.
I know.
So tell me about that. How did that happen, do you think, out of going to an Illumination Intensive, first off?
Well, I think I really don't know exactly what made that particular thing happen. I had no idea it had happened, actually, until a few days later, and I began to menstruate, and I thought, this is odd. This isn't supposed to happen.
It was that fast?
Well,
few days?
Very fast. Yeah, well, maybe it was maybe it was at least a week.
Still.
But it began, you know, everything just seemed to become whole again.
Wow.
And now, I don't think that that's something that always happens to people when they go through that kind of experience. I think it's rather rare. For me, I guess it was some karmic thing. I believe there's karma. We all have a certain karma, and it doesn't mean that when you go to a workshop, you're going to have your, you know, your body heal. It doesn't mean that at all. It just means that if you have the karma for that to happen, then that can happen.
Well, do you find that, it could be quite different for everybody, direct experience. It's not like sign up and on the brochure it says you'll menstruate in a week.
No, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, so everyone has a different experience of that.
So, but at that point, though, because that did happen for you, that must have got your attention pretty quick.
Well, I think that was the idea.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're all different. I mean, I've watched people have very subtle experiences. But I was sort of a dramatic type. So I think I needed a dramatic experience to get the attention, as you say.
So
and it did.
It did. And what happened next?
Well, my life changed where all I wanted to do from, someone that was really interested in being, seen and acknowledged and moving up in the world, every penny that I made, I spent on doing these meditation retreats. That's all I could think about was when I could experience that deeper state again.
Oh, so you started facilitating the...
Well, I didn't facilitate that particular workshop, but I did workshops of my own. And have for 20 odd years. But I just meant I went to take the workshop. I didn't actually do it myself or lead it, that particular one.
Mm-hmm. So you started your own. I mean, your whole life path became about working towards facilitating this for others in various
ways.
Well,
it seems that way. I didn't promote at all. I had no intention of. I moved from Toronto and. I hooked up with a master that wasn't involved with that particular group at all and spent years with her, 20 years actually, and spent time in India and New York. And so my life path changed radically. And I, of course, left my husband because we were doing very different things and he wasn't really agreeing with where I was going. And but it was the most loving breakup I've ever had in my life, really.
So he was not on the spiritual path?
No.
And suddenly you are and you're going in different directions.
Going in different directions. So we had a breakup and my life just completely went in the direction of spirituality.
Who's the master that you trained with for 20 years? Is it someone that we'd be familiar
with? Gurumai, her name is.
I'm not familiar.
Muktananda, that group. And it was very phenomenal.
How has your belief system changed then from the day that you walked in and had this illumination experience to now?
Well, it's changed in a lot of ways. I would say that that illumination experience gave me some... different ways of looking at life, of course. One of the things that I really got from it was, and that's what caused me or got me to write the book, was that I realized that nothing exists that isn't God. That was one of the things that really came to me. And where that came from is the fact that in my enlightenment experience, I was in rage and even cursing in the moment of awakening. Tell me who you are. I was like, who the hell do you think I am? I'm so mad. And one of the things I learned from this is that the emotions are simply like beacons of the soul's longing for God. I know in spiritual paths where, emotions are considered, you've got to kind of keep them away or push them down or whatever. But this never left me, this experience, because I realized that the rage was such a longing. It was such rage to please get this stuff away from me so I can know the truth here.
You know, it's funny. I was just thinking about the first movie that was focused on consciousness that's made it into the mainstream prior to The Secret, which was, what the bleep do we know?
Okay.
That keeps in fitting with that.
Right. Okay. Well, I guess it's a little bit of a different perspective here. Because I feel that at the core of everything is what they call like a spanda. You know, it's like a pulsation of the divine energy.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes, is there all the time. We just have to walk through the veil, or we just have to open the door. And everything can be used to take us there. All of our anger, hatred, jealousy, desire is really just our soul's cry to return home.
So to stop seeing it as a negative, bad thing.
Yeah. Begin to see it as, okay, it's not like you want to chase, you know, being angry or chase being jealous or whatever. It's not about chasing your bad thoughts. It's more about, okay, this is what's coming up for me and it just doesn't seem to want to go. And instead of analyzing it and doing therapy on it and trying to figure this out about it and that out about it, I mean, I remember one of my teachers saying that 98% of the stuff that we have going on, we'll never know. We'll only be able to play with 2%. So given that 98% we're not going to really know about, the only way really, in my opinion, is to take it all to the feet of the divine and take it to the love. Take it to the source.
I guess crossing the bridge or connecting the dots for people is the big thing on that, you know, is like one thing to say, another thing to do, another thing to actually succeed at doing.
Right.
And I was reading through, I love how your book is designed in soundbite bits for the busy reader. Anyone can pick this up. It's great.
Yeah.
And just, you know, the points to meditate on. And I was reading the chapter or page about the when you were having anxiety about a plane ride in wind. And, you know, how you went from that point of separation to, well, why don't you walk the audience through that?
Yeah, I was really frightened on that plane ride. That particular airline had just had an accident just about a week before on that very flight.
Yeah.
And so I was really frightened. I thought, oh, God, I just really don't want to get on this plane. And so I was, you know, eating cookies and doing everything I could to try and distract myself. And then I got mad at myself. I said, no, I'm going to walk out there into the wind, and I'm just going to let that wind not frighten me, because it was hot, you know, the winds were high and the plane was about to take off soon. And as I stood there, I became the wind. I was so determined not to separate myself from it that my intention that became so strong that I became the wind, and no longer was I separate, no longer was I frightened. And then I became the plane, and I became all of the people on the plane, and I just became everything in that moment, and then my fear just went away.
It was an incredible description in the book. It was amazing, because I can relate to plane rides.
Yeah.
An enlightenment test every time I get on one. Oh, who thought of that, going into a tube and
hurtling
along?
I
mean, it's all an exercise of getting out of ego and control, isn't it?
It is. It's completely. It's again, this is another doorway. Everything is a doorway if we choose to use it that way. Every time we get on a plane is another doorway into the divine self, because it's life and death, really. We don't know.
That's it. You know, when I went to Peru, I was sitting on a bus hurtling up to the top, you know, where the bus is, the top of the bus is anyway at Machu Picchu.
Mm-hmm.
And they go on that little switchback, cliffy, single-lane dirt road, and they barrel up until they almost run into another bus coming down, and then they barrel, they clank it into reverse, and, you know, right along the edge.
This in India.
Oh, God, you know. And I was sitting behind Shamanic Bridge, Jorge Luis Delgado, who's just kind of so calm and jovial, no matter what's going on, you know. He's like, well, you know, if it's your time to go, this is it, and you can just be okay with it. And eventually I was like, yeah. So, in a smaller way, you know, for a moment, I guess, so you're saying, like, that moment was a doorway of expanding.
Exactly.
Being okay with it.
Everything is a doorway. There's nothing that isn't a doorway. Because, again, like I said earlier, the sponda, the divine pulsation is there all the time. There's always something waiting for us to dive in and feel our true self.
So what is this thing, this attachment to it being good and bad in a certain way, and this is right and this is wrong? And I mean, how many layers of meditations and things did you have to go through to kind of get past that idea?
Well, that's kind of like duality. And when we go to the true self, the self where there is no good and no bad, it's just the play of consciousness, or it's just the movement of, you know, I guess play of consciousness is the best way to describe it. And if we don't grab it, then it's just like a cloud going by.
Is it something we've talked about, you know, in different ways over the years, in the last 10 years on the show? And, you know, I understand not being attached to things, and that makes the flow happen more, and you get out of struggle. But I'm still attached to breathing, personally, and not being in immense pain, and, you know, like, to be able to do it fully.
The full, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think there's a way that we can do it fully without being connected to something divine. I don't feel there is a way. Because we will be attached as long as we're in this. And only when we can pass through a doorway where we move beyond just the physical realm, where we move beyond body consciousness. And that's the only way I feel that we can truly be non-attached.
So even the attachment to being non-attached is a bit of an attachment.
An attachment, yeah.
Wow. So, well, tell me over the years then, what's the meditation that you teach? Tell me about that.
Well, I'm not really teaching. I wouldn't call it meditation. I've been doing groups for years. And each group is a little bit different. I've been doing a woman's group for, I guess it's been about 15 years now. And many groups before that. I don't know how to describe myself in what I do, other than that people come. I never remember promoting it, but they're still coming after 15 years, and they sit, and we sit together, and I lead them through, you know, relaxation, I guess meditation, and then offer it up to the highest power, whatever we're supposed to know, and something happens, a miracle happens every time we come together.
Like what?
Well, it's hard to say. I don't mean everybody's uterus is growing back or anything like that. But, you know, little miracles. I think every little thing it can be like a miracle. People realize something about maybe the way they're treating their husband or treating their child, or maybe they have to find another way to include God in their life, because so many of us, all of us, again, back to when we're attached, we live here thinking we do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the doers. And if we don't do it, it won't get done. And so we get tight and we get frightened. And the only way, just like you were asking me about the attachment, the only way I see, and I've never experienced any of that doer to start to let go, is, again, connecting with something higher than this body.
It's so interesting too. Over the, you know, one of the things I look for and get excited about is when I find people like yourself that operate their business in the same vein of the message that they're teaching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're walking their talk where the bottom line's concerned.
Right,
you're not out there promoting and doing, you're attracting it in and allowing whatever to, you know, basically facilitating and getting the hell out of the way,
mm-hmm.
the little you, and allowing spirit to come in and do whatever is meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Well, it is. I mean, it's not always easy financially, but by the same token, all the needs are taken care of. And there's a feeling of wealth, of the true wealth, I guess.
So how would you define what this magic doorway is?
The magic doorway is a place where we drop through the appearances, the surface appearances, into something where we're held in deep love. We're held in the sense of, I am one with God, I'm not separate. So any surface appearance, any relationship, anything, every moment of the day, every interaction with every person, anything we do, anything we think, in between the thoughts, there's like a doorway that we can fall into. The space, there's a space that we can fall into. And in that space is God, is love.
So how do you define God?
Well, I don't know that I can define God. I don't think I have that ability at all. To me, when I experience the feeling of God, I experience this love coming through my being, not for anything, but for that which I am, that which is, and this sense of gratefulness.
What about your daily practices on this? What do you do as far as your daily spiritual practice?
Well, every day I get up and meditate in the morning, and then during the day I chant or repeat a mantra, which is sort of a secret mantra which I've been given by a master, and just pretty much pray all day. I just find just pray, you know, because when the ego starts to come up or the fear or attachment, it's really all I feel that I can do in those moments is pray.
So when you define praying, what do you call praying?
Something as simple as help me. Help me, I'm lost here, or help me, I'm afraid, or could you help me with my ego here because I'm, you know, tied up in it. So somehow it's just about, I just find that including God or Source or the Creator in my day. So when I watch myself doing something stupid, I can pray at that moment and go, okay, I need a little help here. See, I'm off track, or I'm a little overreactive over here, or afraid of this, or whatever.
So, but when you say I pray all day, you're not like sitting on a mat. You're
No.
You're wherever you are doing life.
Wherever I am, whatever I'm doing. It's almost like I feel this sense for myself that on my own, I don't feel like I can really do anything. I feel like, yes, I can do things. I can, you know, do the basic, you know, take care of the person things. But there's a sense in me, I guess, from all of the spiritual stuff I've been through, that I really don't feel that I can do anything.
So maybe define further what that means.
Okay. Well, I almost feel like I have to include God or Source in everything I do, because if I don't, I don't feel like I'm I don't feel like I'm in myself. I don't feel comfortable. I don't feel happy. I don't feel... It's like having a friend all the time. It's like having a friend all the time. And knowing that that friend's there, and I have all kinds of examples of how that shows up in my life.
Well, I can certainly understand and relate to that. I consider myself administrator of News for the Soul, and Spirit's kind of the one in charge. And, you know, those moments where little me tries to, get busy, getting in the way.
And I find that getting rid of the little me with the mind is not, you can't do it. It's not possible.
So let's talk about that a bit. I mean, you know, the mind trick stuff, the ego mind, the fear-based chatterbrain over there. Mm-hmm. Where does yours go? Where is it all day long, and how do you deal with it?
Well, it goes. You know, it comes up. It's like, oh, I wonder if this will be okay, or this will happen. And I have to talk to myself. I have to go, okay, I can't just do it with the mind and that... some technique. I just have to simply pray, and that's where the prayer comes in. Just help me. And then it's much easier to just say, just help me, than try to figure out some way of holding it or being in it. I just go to the help.
So you just, by setting the intention of connecting.
Yeah.
Just, there we are.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
But that's my way of doing it. Other people are more intellectual in the way they deal with their spiritual self, or their, and that's fine too. But for me, it's got to be simple.
So do you find, you know, when you really get through to the other side of this doorway, everything really is simple?
Mm-hmm. It's always simple on the other side.
That sounded
never
ominous.
Simple. Yeah. It's always simple, and it's always filled with love. It could be something as simple as just hearing the voice that says, it's okay. It's okay.
Now, in part of the journey in your book, you talk about the dark night of the soul, which is often referred to. What was that for you?
Well, the dark night of the soul is a time, a deeper ego purification, where some of the deeper impressions, when you've studied with masters and whatnot, you go through layers and layers of the ego, and then you find these deep impressions. I mean, you know, some people call them past life impressions that are always coming up. And when you go through the dark night of the soul, you go through a period of darkness where you are going through these impressions, but also de-identifying from who you think you are. Because we tend to have an idea of ourselves as, you know, this is who I am, this is what I do, there's this, also this sense of, you know, comfort, like you kind of know where you stand or what you're about, more or less. And then when the dark night of the soul comes, it changes everything radically. And for me, I felt just life itself just went crazy, you know. People were dying around me. Myself, I came down with an illness.
So do you find that I mean, normally when we typically hear about stories of the dark night of the soul, it's at the beginning, it's sort of like the crux of the turning point of where they embark onto the spiritual path and become kind of, it's at the beginning of the awakening. Do you find that, or are there different levels?
Different levels of the dark night of the soul. At the beginning of awakening, yeah, often there is a kind of dark night of the soul, because the soul is longing for something. So there's a dark night because it feels the emptiness of what has gone before. Or rather, the emptiness of what they'd it hasn't yet experienced. Whereas the mystics speak of the dark night of the soul, it comes after there's been illumination. And after there's been a certain level of illumination, then there's a dark night that comes, because there's a deeper ego purification that has to happen, so that you can be united with the source, rather than, at first you have this sense of, wow, you know, all this wonderful spiritual stuff, how great, which is like the honeymoon stage of it. But then later on, there's another layer of it.
For me personally, I've started wondering if it was an infinite layer, you know, it's like a onion, but being peeled outwardly, you know, from the inside to the outside, that will just never end. So any sense on that?
Well, it is. Well, the deeper you go, they say that spiritual people always seem to be, you know, a bit messed up. Well, because they're purifying deeper layers. And so as you go deeper, you can handle more. It's like going from grade 9 to grade 10 to 11, 12, university. So you can handle more, so you're dealing with more, so you get your a different curriculum.
Yippee.
Yeah. But within it, there's also the grace and the help. And that's when we really need to use the magic doorway. That's why I walk around going, help, help.
Now would be good. Yeah. Wow. Well, I wanted to ask about the whole death thing. When you went through this process and since, you know, the facilitations that you've done and stuff, what have you talked about as far as death? As far as, you know, what the belief system is around where you go, do you come back, do you go somewhere else? You mentioned karma, so...
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of the mystics speak about the different realms. Like, we're in the physical realm right now. And then there's the astral realm, which is a little less material than this realm, or, you know, quite a bit less material. And then there's the causal realm, which is, again, less material again, and the super causal, where some people stop there and figure they've reached their spiritual goal, really. And then you go beyond that into other layers, spiritual layers, that, and again, it depends on, you know, your karma, if you're going to go that high or not. After death, it depends on what we've done in life as well. How much meditation we've done, where we've put our focus, has our focus been on the form the whole life, or is it on the source? I mean, it's not like we're going to die and then all of a sudden it's going to be something all that different. We'll go, from what they say, where we've lived. So in our life, if we've meditated in a particular way where we can go beyond body consciousness, we'll then know in our death what that will be like.
So do you have fear around that subject?
Well, sure. I'm still working with fear in that area. But again, you know, I know that at that time I'll be taken care of. I feel that very strongly and know that and in life have experienced that.
So it goes back to that connection to source or spirit, whatever's bigger than the little us. Little ass down here on the little rock hurtling through space.
Yeah.
Who will die inevitably.
Exactly. And that's why, and that is the reason why we need to put our focus on something higher than where we are right now. But most of us keep our focus on something other than spirituality. But we just have to remember that, hey, we're going to die. It's simple, isn't it, really?
It is.
We're going to die, and so we might as well find out where we're going when we can do it while we're alive.
It's one of my personal pep talks when people phone me and they want an uplift, you know. Well, we're on this rock hurtling through space and we're all going to die anyway. So they don't seem to get it.
No, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. So, as far as what is dissolving the last door to the divinity, what is that?
Well, it's dissolving the sense that we're separate from God.
See, it's another one of those things that's easy to say, one thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
Quite another to do.
And harder to do.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we don't do it. That's the good part about it.
Thank God. So how do we not do it?
Well, it doesn't matter what we do, we still don't do it. It's what's designed. It's our karma. If we're supposed to experience a certain thing, we do.
Well, that certainly takes the pressure off, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
my to-do list is shortened dramatically today. I don't have to do it.
Well, it does take the pressure off. If we know that there's something higher than us doing everything, it takes a lot of pressure off. And then we can feel at peace, and we can know that we're not doing this alone, and our little ego personality is still going to kick up, you know. It's still going to have a few little reactions here and there, and that's okay.
You know, you mentioned, I mean, so much around the struggle and the doing is often around survival core issues for people, money, you know, and you mentioned about money earlier. How do you connect with that through spirit or God, or, you know, how does that, or does it for you?
Well, I think, it's karmic. You can visualize $1 million till you're blue in the face, and you're not going to get it unless it's your karma. So it's what your karma is. If you're to have money, you'll have money. And if you're to not, I mean, I've had large amounts of money in my life and then very small amounts. And nothing had anything to do with me doing something right spiritually.
So if a person has one of those situations now, that doesn't necessarily mean that's their lifelong karma, though.
No, not at all. Doesn't mean it's their lifelong karma, but then it could be.
Okay.
It doesn't. We think, again, we're doing all of that. We're the one that's, you know, making all the money happen. But, you know, again, we have to go through the motions of doing our work and going through our karma, and the money, you know, comes. And it, when it goes, it's time for it to go. And when it's time for it to multiply, then it multiplies.
Okay, so it's not about, again, going back to that sitting on the mat all day.
No.
If it's meant to be, it will be, and I'll just sit on my mat. It's about taking the actions anyway.
Taking action and doing the work in the world and doing what you're destined to do. We couldn't sit on the mat all day anyway. If we tried,
mm-hmm.
because something would come along and we'd have to get off the mat, you know. Superintendent would be knocking at your door, they'd need to fix the balcony or the, you know, whatever.
They'd be reclaiming your mat because you didn't pay for it.
That's right, exactly. They want your mat back, your phone, your part.
Mat guy.
Yeah. So, No, it's not like that. I mean, we're like, well, as I see it like we're puppets, and we just go along, and we do what we're here to do, and keep the best thing we can do, and the way that we can best use our time is to keep our focus on the source while we're here.
So, two more bigger questions to the top of the hour here. Firstly, actually, no, I want to ask that one second. One of the main questions I wanted to ask you was, you know, oftentimes when people embark into, you know, kind of becoming timeless and immersing into altered states of meditation and really, you know, stepping out of the box, they see things that are supposedly not supposed to be possible happen. Have you had a lot of that experience?
I've had some of it, yes.
What would be one of the more dramatic?
Well, I would say the uterus growing back was pretty dramatic.
Definitely.
Seeing the light, the power of the Kundalini awakening years ago, that was pretty dramatic.
Mm.
Having inner experiences in meditation can be quite. Well, I wouldn't call it dramatic. I think the more you meditate, the more subtle things are. But again, you don't talk about them with everyone because they're different. They're not your everyday experience.
Yes, very true. Although you talk about them here, news for us all, because we're used to it.
Well, you, for example, when someone takes on a master or a guru. The purpose of taking on a master or guru is that the master or guru comes and stands in front of you to guide you where you need to be guided. And that's not exactly your everyday situation.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't want to be telling people that. But that's the whole point of doing it. It's not just a kind of a cool thing to do. There's a reason for it. There's a reason to have any guide for anything, and spiritually I think it's an important thing to have a guide.
So do you have a new master now or teacher that you...
Well, I am with a teacher right now, yes. Yeah.
Okay. My last question for, because we're already at the top of the hour, is free will. Because we've talked about karma and all that stuff, so let's get the free will question in there. What's your thought on free will? Do we have it? Is it a load of crap? What do you think?
Well, I think at the highest level, it's all destined.
Hmm.
It's just a matter of what we believe. If we believe we have free will, then we have to. Again, that's karmic. Then we have to act as if we have free will. If we believe that God does everything, then our life is based on God doing everything.
All right, then. Well, we will have to leave it there for today. We've put a good dent into exploring that magic doorway. The Magic Doorway into the Divine is the book, and themagicdoorway.com is the website. That's where you go. Deborah Lavelle, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you.
Attention, indigos, healers, cultural creatives, and agents of social change. Are you ready to act upon your inner wisdom and step forward into your life purpose? With 16 years of hands-on real-world results, empowerment specialist Robert Moonsong is available to help as a visionary guide to authentic spiritual growth and awakening. To subscribe for free or find out about upcoming teleclasses, visit robertmoonsong.com now. That's robertmoonsong.com. In December 2005, News for the Soul host Nicole Whitney experienced the most dramatic, life-changing psychic reading of her life. In that brief 10-minute mini-session, she released years of emotional baggage when Carrie O'Connor connected with a recently deceased family member, bringing Nicole a life-changing message from beyond the grave. Since that fateful day, Nicole has invited Carrie O'Connor on as a regular News for the Soul guest to do readings on the air. But you do not have to wait. Carrie is available for private sessions right now. Nicole has laughingly suggested wearing goggles and a helmet for these sessions because of the powerful energy that seems to come through Carrie when she's doing a reading. But don't take our word for it. Experience it for yourself. So pack up your goggles and helmet and book your life-changing session with Carrie O'Connor today. Go to InsideOut-OutsideIn.com. That's InsideOut-OutsideIn.com.
Who are you? Why are you here? What is the meaning of life? These burning questions have plagued mankind throughout our existence. How would you like to experience a process that would allow you to have some of the answers? Answers that would cause you to live with higher awareness and deeper authenticity from now on? Well, you can. Warrior Sage is offering an experiential 5-day enlightenment workshop called Illumination Intensive. regularly about $3,000 to attend, Satyen Raja of Warrior Sage is offering this life-changing five-day course to News for the Soul listeners totally for free. That's right. The tuition has been completely waived for all News for the Soul listeners. Satyen says this experience is so profound, he wants to share it with the world. So don't miss out on this special opportunity. To have your own direct experience of awakening with Warrior Sage, go to IlluminationIntensive.com now and tell them News for the Soul sent you. That's IlluminationIntensive.com.
You can learn to bend metal with the power of your mind. For real. This little exercise with cutlery is life-changing. If you could truly bend metal with your mind, what else could you do? What couldn't you do? The one and only News for the Soul Spoon Bending Kit contains a step-by-step guided spoon bending process on video and live footage of at least two different spoon bending demonstrations. You'll also get to see and hear celebrity cameos in video and audio clips. You really can do this, for real. Everyone can. In fact, most of you will be bending spoons on the same day you receive this kit. And you'll be able to show others how to do it with success. For more information about the Spoon Bending Kit, or to order the instantly downloadable version for $39, visit newsforthesoul.com.
It's not just a show. It's a movement. You're listening to News for the Soul, the number one life-changing radio show in the world, according to Google and AOL, and the largest free life-changing audio resource on the web. We feature the top luminaries in the evolution of human consciousness and have kept all of our shows all free, all of the time, for the world to hear. In a recent listener survey, News for the Soul listeners responded with overwhelming appreciation and praise, which they summarized with this one powerful statement. News for the Soul is not just a show, it's a movement. Go to newsforthesoul.com to see for yourself. That's newsforthesoul.com.
LifeChangingTV.com is a model of conscious journalism, documenting evolution of human consciousness through high-quality video programming. A combination of metaphysical awareness and an open, honest sense of inquiry relay the true story through alternative media that will blow your mind. Founders Nicole Whitney and Peter Williams started the channel after meeting in March 2005, drawing from Whitney's journalism background and Peter's experience as a cameraman for CNN. Since the project began, they have been able to interview many luminaries from around the world, including Stuart Wilde, John Kehoe, Dr. David Morehouse, Anne Marie Evers, John Hutchison, and others. To watch this fresh, unfiltered, cutting-edge information online, become a subscriber. Visit LifeChangingTV.com and click the Join button. It's that simple. LifeChangingTV.com, making the world a better place, one frame at a time. Enlightened, having knowledge and spiritual insight, freedom from illusion. Enlightened dating, an idea whose time has come. It is time for relationships that transcend the old fear-based paradigm of power plays, control dramas, stereotypes, and conditioned response. EnlightenedDating.com offers introductions and support for conscious dating. EnlightenedDating.com is about synchro destiny rather than the volume of memberships or regional location. Enlightened daters operate in the realm of all possibility, far beyond limitation of the conditioned mind. And it is not just a meeting place. Inside, you'll access the best in support and training from conscious relational experts from around the world. Ongoing interviews, webinars, and more support the search and journey in conscious relationship, all free, 24/7, for all members at enlightenedDating.com.
Hey, this is Dave Morehouse, and you're listening to News for the Soul.
Here's a moment dedicated to your empowerment, brought to you by James Ray.
Hello, this is James Arthur Ray. Having studied and practiced several shamanic traditions as well as ceremonial magic, one of the best definitions of shaman and magicians I've heard is that they are trackers of power. Their insights come from a direct revelation or a personal experience of the transcendent source versus something that's handed to them from an outside source. Are you with me? Shaman, mystics, and ceremonial magicians inhabit the realms of the transdimensional. So how can we take what these experiences give us and apply them to our practical lives? First, start by acknowledging that you must seek your own direct experiences of spirit, God, enlightenment, or whatever you want to name it. The ultimate teacher is higher consciousness itself. Secondly, realize that these experiences are worthless unless you return and ground them into your physical form and life. Power is an empty vessel unless it creates results. The Buddha used to tell his students of a widowed father with one son. While he was away on business, thieves broke into his home, kidnapped his son, and burned the place to the ground. When he returned, he found what he believed to be the charred remains of his only son. He gathered them up, placed them in an urn, and carried them wherever he went. Years later, the son escaped from his captors and returned to find his father had rebuilt their home. Late at night, he knocked on the door. The father awoke from a deep sleep and called out, "Who is it?" Elated, the young man replied, "It's your son." The grief-stricken father shouted in anger for him to go away. The son protested, but the father just wouldn't listen. He thought it was some kind of cruel joke as he glanced at his urn by the bed. The son left in sorrow, never to return. After his story, the Buddha would tell his students, "Sometimes you buy into a lie so strongly as the truth that when truth comes to you in person and knocks on your door, you won't let it in." Trackers of power must learn to question everything, to let go of ideas and beliefs that may once have seemed true but could keep them from greater happiness. Let me ask you, how many of your beliefs are your own? How many of them qualify as knowing from a direct personal experience? How open are you to questioning everything you believe to be true? This is James Arthur Ray, asking you to ask and answer the hard questions, to stop the world, and to use the principles you're learning here to realize your infinite self.
Hear more, a lot more, from James Ray, right here on News for the Soul, newsforthesoul.com/JamesRay. Or just go to our homepage and look for our latest featured interview with James Ray at newsforthesoul.com. And let's get back to the show.
This has been News for the Soul with Danyon Brinkley and Nicole Whitney. Visit us anytime online at www.newsforthesoul.com, where you can listen to all our previously aired shows at any time and so much more. Have a great week, and remember, what you focus on expands.